Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back. Glad you're with us, because guess what? We've got a great, great guest lined up for you. That's a special treat. And I'm excited, I have to tell you. Gregory Zuckerman is our guest today, author and journalist. He is very accomplished and is sought after for his public and commentary and experience, all these things that he does to be a resource to a lot of folks in a lot of different ways. He has appeared regularly on CNBC, Fox Business, Yahoo Finance, Bloomberg Television, and National Public Radio, BBC. The list goes on and on, and I'm glad to count our program as one of those. And Gregory is a special writer at the Wall Street Journal and author of a book, and I'm holding a copy in my hand. I'm looking forward to reading this over the weekend. Maybe I'll be able to get through it. Should not be able to put it down. The Frackers, the outrageous inside story of the new billionaire Wildcats, and national best-selling book published in October of 2014. So we're very pleased to have Gregory come on and talk with us about all things fracking and the story. And of course, we're going to take full advantage of Gregory's perspective on where we are with his coverage of some of the big things happening in the market, Wall Street, all of that. So let me just dive in, because I've got like 57,000 questions for Gregory. There he is. Welcome, Gregory, to the program.
Great to be here. Nice to talk to you.
Excellent. All right. So in no particular order, I have so much to ask. So let me dive in. First, I'll start kind of with some of the current topics in the world, because I know you're following all this. So what do you make, from your perspective and experience covering Wall Street as long as you have, what do you make of the current market we're in? What do you see where we are?
To me, I see challenging times. So you've got a market that's been rallying since 2009. Mm-hmm. It's no longer at reasonable levels. I'm not saying that they're excessive, so you don't want to go overboard with caution. But we're not cheap anymore. And it's hard to see where the growth is going to come from. Emerging markets are really melting down, places like Brazil and China probably get worse before it gets better. So it seems like a time where you don't want to go to cash, but you want to be cautious and take some of the gains, profits from the last few years.
That's fair. That's a fair assessment. And with the emerging markets, is a lot of that driven by the commodities?
Yeah, a lot of it is. A lot of it is just sort of some countries like Brazil that have had some political issues as well and leadership. And when it comes to China, you know, they're making a shift, or they're trying to make a shift from manufacturing to a more consumer-based economy, and it's difficult. And they've got all the kinds of debt that they've been piling up for years. And some would say that the growth we've seen has been sort of ephemeral, maybe kind of smoke and mirrors. So it's coming back to haunt them. I would argue I'm a little more optimistic longer term, but you gotta be cautious about leadership there.
Okay.
And in Brazil and some other emerging markets.
All right. And the other elephant in the room is, of course, the Fed and rate changes. And I wasn't surprised to see them not increase rates, just because I put myself in their shoes and I don't know what they know. But if I were on that Federal Reserve Board, even if I thought our economy could handle maybe a quarter point increase in the rates, I would hold off a little bit longer. Where do you think we're headed there?
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the Fed. I'm actually, it would be nice if they raised rates a little bit and normalized things, as you would say. You could see what really valuations are relative to debt, to bonds. But things have adjusted a little bit already in the bond market. So in some ways, the Fed would be playing catch-up if you look at junk bond spreads and corporate bonds, et cetera. A lot of it is more just sort of tone and enthusiasm and whether people get nervous. But, you know, one or two Fed hikes wouldn't be such a horrible idea given how low rates are right now.
Okay, very good. And we see oil now trading, what, down in the 40s. And do you think we'll go, what your perspective, you think we'll go lower, kind of stay there, or could we see it start to rise? What's going to drive some additional movement in oil?
Listen, I'm a writer, so if I knew so much, I would be trading.
Hey, listen, I'm taking advantage.
I am of the belief, because of my book, I've got a real belief in the ability of this country to find both oil and gas that all the experts dismissed it. And that's sort of the theme of the book, the fact that the experts kind of gave up on America. And there are a bunch of really resourceful, innovative entrepreneurs, wildcatters, who believed in this country and believed in the ability to find natural gas and oil, and they continue to do so. They're becoming much more efficient. So a few years ago, if you were in the fracking business, you really needed oil at maybe $60, $70 a barrel.
Okay.
Now they're becoming, now they can really find large amounts of both oil and gas at much lower prices. So as a result of what the Saudis have done, flooding the market, hoping prices go down to kill off the frackers, it's not really working. So as a result, we're going to see much more supply in larger amounts than most people expected. I was really skeptical when oil rallied earlier this year, and they've come back down. So I'm just of the belief that we're going to have low prices, however you define that, for many years.
Okay, and that's exactly the subject I was going to get to. And but I couldn't help myself, Gregory, to get your perspective on some of these other events, because I know you're covering and watching all of this. With regard to the fracking, and again, we're going to get into this in a little more detail, but how much do you have in your mind, or have you seen, because I know you're so much closer to this than, you know, the average financial planner like me, well, not average, but, you know, the financial planner or even the retail investor, how much of what kind of measurable impact do you think there has been on the price of oil that we see in the United States because of fracking? Is there an estimate of the impact?
Well, first off, in terms of natural gas, it's been huge. So we pay about a third to a half the prices that they do in Asia and in Europe. And it's all because of this fracking
boom. Here.
And when it comes to oil, listen, it's not only because of the frackers and their extra supply, but a large part of the reason why oil prices have tumbled. I mean, I'm in New Jersey. We pay about $180 or $190 to fill up our tanks and per gallon. And that's a large part because the marginal producer today is the guy in North Dakota or Oklahoma or Texas, and the Saudis are nervous. They've been losing market share. They decided to flood the market to try to get it back. So, yeah, it's changed everything, this revolution in American oil fields.
That's ironic that their production coming online, which obviously adds to the supply, ironically opened up more supply and more pumping by the Saudis and everybody else that increased the supply. And that's kind of a funny byproduct.
They didn't want to lose any more market share. They had enough of it. And so they're trying to put some of these frackers out of business. Yeah.
All right. And one more quick question before we go to a break is how much has it, I know you already talked about the natural gas. How much do you think it's impacting oil itself in terms of our dependence on foreign sources? How much are we seeing a shift?
So we are seeing dramatic shift. I'm not a big believer that we're going to be energy independent per se, but I think just dependent on ourselves, Mexico, and Canada, our friends. So we only get about 6% of our oil right now from the Middle East, and a lot of it's just refinery issues. Some of the oil we're producing in the United States we can't really use. We're going to have to start exporting it. So, but yeah, we're moving towards energy dependence, and we could produce about 10 million barrels or so a year, which is as high as we've ever produced in this country.
Excellent. Excellent. We've just joining us, Gregory Zuckerman, ladies and gentlemen, author, journalist, and the book, The Frackers, The Outrageous Inside Story of the New Billionaire Wildcats, which we're going to dig in a lot deeper into after the break. We appreciate Gregory being with us. We'll take the quick break. We'll be right back.
Does getting financial advice seem like a game of cat and mouse? Maybe it's time to hire a fiduciary, a financial professional who puts the needs of his clients ahead of his own. A fiduciary also means an advisor should recommend products and services he believes will best serve his clients' needs, not what an insurance company or investment company tells him he has to sell. Next time you're talking to an advisor, ask him, "Are you a fiduciary? Yes or no?" If the advisor doesn't know, then the answer's probably no. This public service announcement is brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Gregory Zuckerman on the line with us, author and journalist, special writer for the Wall Street Journal, and author of The Frackers, The Outrageous Inside Story of the New Billionaire Wildcatters, and several other books to his credit. The Greatest Trade Ever, the behind-the-scenes story of how John Paulson defied Wall Street and made financial history. He's got another book coming out in 2016, Rising Above, How 10 Athletes Overcame Challenges in Their Youth to Become Stars. So just popping them out all the time. I love it.
That one I'm doing with my two boys, actually. It's more for kids.
Excellent.
I'm excited about that, yeah.
All right, that's cool. Well, listen, I'm not going to ask you to give the book away or give them the whole story for free here, but I'd love to talk a little bit about your book, the Frackers. And first of all, let's back up. What prompted you to really to zero in on this? Because I know you cover a lot of different things and you're watching, you know, a lot of things from your perspective at the Wall Street Journal. What got you interested in writing this particular book or really focusing in on this one area?
Well, this seemed to me the most important business story out there. I mean, the geopolitical impact you're seeing in Syria and Saudi Arabia and elsewhere in Russia, I'm going to see more of it, the economic impact. It really was our biggest growth area for a number of years, the energy industry. Now it's suffering and it's pulling down markets with it, junk bond market and parts of the equity markets too. So it just seemed like the most interesting and important business story. And also, I don't think there'd been enough written about who was behind it. So there's a group of guys, and they're usually men, and they saw something that the experts didn't. So everyone said we were running out of natural gas, running out of oil in this country. Why don't you go offshore, Asia, Africa?
Right.
That's what all the big guys, ExxonMobil, BP, Chevron, they all had given up on this country. And there were some, really there's entrepreneurs who believed in a new type of technology, and that was the horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, and they developed it. And they believed in this country and its ability. And I love the theme of sort of David and Goliath, where the big guys, the experts, all got it wrong. Warren Buffett, Goldman Sachs, they all bet, KKR, they all bet we're running out of natural gas in this country, and they didn't believe that these entrepreneurs could make it happen. So I love that theme personally.
That's cool. So the little guys, the entrepreneurs, the guys that think differently. And so did they, as they started exploring these technologies, did they run into any environmental or other regulatory issues?
Well, early on, all the environmental organizations and activists were big believers in fracking, and that's because it's opened up an ability of this country to shift from coal to natural gas. Natural gas is much safer for the environment. Our carbon dioxide emissions as a result have tumbled in this country. I mean, we never signed the Kyoto Agreement. We sort of made fun of it, and yet we're compliant with it.
It's just ironic.
It is ironic, and it's not a conscious effort on our part. It's mostly because of the frackers, and they're opening up all this natural gas. And again, we've gotten off coal. And further irony is that what are we doing with all this coal? Well, we're shipping it abroad, and England buys all our coal now. So, you know, they're big talkers in Europe about being green. But
yeah, those dirty Brits getting our
coal.
Yeah.
So early on, the environmentalists were supportive of the fracking effort, and then they shifted. And you can argue why, but part of it is because there were some mistakes made along the way by a lot of the frackers, and they weren't careful enough, and they did things they shouldn't have done. And I would argue that they've learned some of their lessons, and they've done a good job of improving, not as much as they should, but they've done a better job of keeping an eye on the environmental side of things. And some people do worry about, the biggest concern I would think is getting addicted to fossil fuels. So things are so cheap right now that maybe long term we won't be investing like we could in solar and wind, things like that.
That makes sense. Well, that's a legitimate concern. So you spoke before the break about, and I think a lot of us, I will admit, you know, not as tuned into the fact that these technologies allowed access to natural gas. I thought it was all about oil and, you know, how they were getting to it in previous places they couldn't go or didn't have the technology to get there. But you're sharing, I think, that there's also, this has really opened up natural gas as well.
Oh, very much so. So until, I don't know, 2 years ago or so, 3 years ago maybe, it was really just a natural gas story. And we are the biggest natural gas producer in the world right now, and it's all because of these fields in Pennsylvania and Oklahoma and Texas and places like that. We're going to be exporting natural gas, liquefied natural gas, come out of Louisiana end of this year. A company called Cheniere Energy is at the forefront. So, we're the leader in natural gas now, and it's, again, only because of this fracking revolution and these entrepreneurs who ignore the expert.
Excellent. So tell me about these guys. What would be good for our listeners to know about, you know, kind of get a sense for the flavor of your book, Gregory, that who are the guys, who are the main guys in the story? And what's their story? What are they about? What got them into this?
Well, they want to make a lot of money. They also wanted to make a mark on this country. A lot of them are very optimistic. You have to be sort of an optimist to be in this industry. There are a lot of ups and downs, as we're seeing right now, with things tumbling. And they've got a lot of confidence in themselves, and they thought they could do the unexpected, and that locate lots of oil and gas and get at it in shale. And shale is this tough rock that everyone knew had lots of oil and gas packed into it, but no one really thought you could get it, except you're spending all kinds of large amounts of money. So these are very optimistic, self-confident entrepreneurs who believe in themselves and believe this country.
Fascinating. Yeah, I love the story. I mean, it strikes me, Gregory, as really going back to what this country was founded on, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
very much so.
And it's like we're rediscovering that. And then, you know, you hear bannered and thrown around this whole idea of an American Renaissance, that this next, this century could be the American Renaissance as we move further into it. And maybe this can be part of another Roaring Twenties.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. We've got some real challenges. But I do think that relative to everybody else in this world, this gives us a real competitive advantage. Mm. Our energy costs are much lower than others. And lots of companies around the world are moving plants to the United States to take advantage. Cement business,
that?
Chemicals, anything with an input of natural gas, kind of energy kind of input. In traveling the country, as I did for this book, I went to Oklahoma and Pennsylvania, Louisiana, North Dakota, all kinds of places, you really do see a spirit that maybe those of us, I'm on the East Coast, those of us on the coast don't necessarily always appreciate, but
right.
There's this innovation going on. I mean, again, this is a story of innovation and technological innovation. It's Americans who ignored the global experts and figured out a way to get all the oil and gas, and how they did it to me was really very encouraging about our nation's future.
That's really cool. So you went to Oklahoma. Did you tour and go and actually look at any of these sites?
Sure. And I spent some time in these man camps where the a lot of the workers live. And some of these towns I write about were just being transformed overnight. I mean, literally, I would rent a car and get a GPS, and I'd keep getting lost. And I would say, ask them why, and they said, Greg, you can't use a GPS here. These streets are literally being named so quickly that the GPS can't keep up.
Wow.
And it's a fascinating place. It's just entrepreneurs from all over the world moving there and going there to try to start businesses, not just in the oil, the gas business. Now you have retailers and restaurateurs, people trying to make their fortune. And it was kind of encouraging.
It's like a gold rush.
In some ways, yeah. It's sort of come to an end recently, but for a while it was really remarkable.
That's really interesting. Did you have to get on a horse and go ride, check out the North 40? Yeah, I've got there and explore. And
no, not quite like that. But, you know, I'm trying to find streets and digging around on my own was quite the adventure.
That's excellent. Excellent. If you're just joining us, Gregory Zuckerman is our guest today, author and journalist. And the book, The Frackers, The Outrageous Inside Story of the New Billionaire Wildcatters. Quick break. We'll come back with Gregory.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be done in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals, couples, and families plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his client's shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. If you'd like to learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, simply call 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. No cost or obligation. Or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back. Gregory Zuckerman on the line with us, author and journalist and the Wall Street special writer, very special writer indeed. He had written the book, The Frackers, The Outrageous Inside Story of the New Billionaire Wildcatters, we've been talking about, and I'm excited to have a copy in my hand that I'm going to read over the weekend. And these guys, the entrepreneurs, the innovators, the risk takers, all of those things that we talked about these people involved, Gregory, this resulted in some, I don't know, say some modest economic benefit to them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, there's a guy I write about named Harold Hamm who grew up just dirt poor, one of 13 children. His parents were sharecroppers, and they traveled in Texas and Oklahoma, and he really couldn't go to school each year till around Christmas time because he had to help his parents in fields, and only then was it so cold that there's nothing more they could do to help them. And he didn't go to college, didn't, wasn't an engineer, geologist, anything like that, but he is among those who've found the most oil. He actually controls his company called Continental Resources Controls, more oil in the Bakken area, North Dakota and elsewhere, than anyone else. And he went from this guy who was just dirt poor to, as of about a year ago, he was worth $18 billion. So it's come down since then, as well as come down. So he's only worth about $7 today. So I feel you've got to feel... Got a feel for him. But yeah, there have been real fortunes made and lost over just the last few years.
Yeah, there's one you wrote, I know that you wrote about, Aubrey McClendon, who got on the wrong end of a deal.
Well, he's an interesting guy because he believed more than most that we could find lots of natural gas in this country. And he led his company called Chesapeake Energy. They leased up... all over this country. I mean, at one point they had leases, they controlled more land, about the three times the size of New Jersey, just a huge land rush. And in some ways he was very right because he and others proved, we can get tons of natural gas from this rock cold shale. But the problem is it sunk prices, all that supply. So at one point he was worth several billion dollars, but then when they found all this natural gas, obviously prices came back down. So in some ways he was too successful for himself and he kind of blew it.
Well, the guys that, if there's any gals in the mix, but the folks that really cashed in on this, are they, you know, with this wealth, this newfound wealth, how is that impacting either their lives or how are they using it? Are they involved with, you know, charitable causes, politics, things like that?
Yeah, you see it in a lot of different places, actually. They don't advertise it, but things like a lot of sports teams. So the owner of the Buffalo Bills and the hockey team up there, Texas Rangers, that's all new money from this shale, from this fracking revolution. And behind the scenes, they are involved in politics and in charity as well.
Excellent. And the one of the other men, George Mitchell, he was involved with some of the mentioned the natural gas. That was part of what he did?
Yeah, he was the first guy really to, and this is a while ago, this is not the George Mitchell related to, not the former senator, he was a... guy ran a mid-sized natural gas company in Texas, and by around 1990 or so, he realized his company was running out of natural gas. They had really no choice but to try to experiment in Texas, this formation full of shale rock. And again, he didn't have, you know, all his rivals like Texas, like the Mobils and the Exxons, they had offshore acreage and Africa and Asia, they gave up on America, but George didn't have that acreage, so he had to make it work in America. And a few young guys working for him, a guy named Nick Steinberger and a few others I write about, with their backs against the wall because things were really tough at that point. And by the late 1990s, they really didn't have that much progress to show for all their work in fracking. And finally, and I describe it in the book, they had, thanks to some luck and also some real smart moves on their part, they all of a sudden found lots of natural gas in Texas. And then people like Aubrey and others kind of said, well, hold on a second. Maybe this country really is packed with natural gas that we can actually access. A gold rush, as it were, was on at that point.
Wow. Well, and the estimates, I know, you know, we're the largest producer of natural gas. And that's just, you know, it's just astounding to think of, you know, that this enormous shift and the focus back on the United States and these deposits. And there have been all kinds of estimates, and I'm sure you've heard them, Gregory, of, you know, we have the quantity that is there in natural gas, if we can get to it, and some of it's under the Appalachian Mountains. And, I mean, just the sheer volume that's there could, I mean, it's supposed to be, what, decades or hundreds of years worth of supply?
Yeah, it depends who you ask. Yeah. But about 100 years worth of natural gas. And also, when it comes to oil, we've got oil, not quite as much, but we've got a good decade or so of serious supply that's going to change things again, give us real competitive advantage over the rest of the world for years to come.
Well, the hope would be that we wouldn't squander this opportunity to, you know, to use that while we develop alternatives, because, you know, there is ultimately, no matter how good the technology gets, and I'm sure you... you're mindful of this, that there's only so much.
Yeah, I'm more optimistic than some others. I think that if you look at people on Wall Street, they're still investing in alternative solar, wind, that kind of thing, and we're actually making a lot of progress there. So in some ways, maybe I'm too optimistic, but or even naive, but I'm a believer that this is something of a way to extend and keep things cheap while we almost a bridge while we push the future.
Well, I'm right there with you. I'm an eternal optimist and believe that there are people, as you write about in the book, The Frackers, the outrageous inside story of the new billionaire wildcatters, that, you know, there are people that are going to do that in every industry and with new technologies, and there will be game changers and fundamental shifts, and, you know, these things will allow us to continue to, you know, do what we do, what we do. And I've got about a minute left. Gregory and I will, I can't resist the temptation because I know you've covered it extensively when all the stories were breaking because they were your stories breaking, and that was PIMCO and Bill Gross's departure and all of that, and I know you were all over it. What's the latest there on PIMCO? Where are they now, so to speak?
So PIMCO, about a year or so ago, saw the shocking departure of Bill Gross, one of their founders, and he's kind of the king of the bond market, and basically got kicked out after offending many of the people working with him and for him for years, and also having some funny performance. But you can be a jerk as long as your performance is really good. But when your performance slows, then people start getting upset, and that's sort of what happened at PIMCO. And he's moved on, and he's at Janus now, and has had some up and down performance, and as has PIMCO. So they both sort of suffered a little bit after the divorce. It was a messy divorce, and they're both still sort of trying to deal with the aftermath.
Yeah, true. Well, maybe he's able to, over Janus, look forward and backwards and nowhere to go. Gregory Zuckerman, ladies and gentlemen, author and journalist, and the book is The Frackers, The Outrageous Inside Story of the New Billionaire Wildcatters. Pick it up and read it like I'm going to this weekend. Gregory, thank you very much for your time. We have a pleasure having you on.
Oh, it's great to be here.
All right. Thank you much.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.